This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Parts of a major American city burning now as riots break out following the killing of an African-American man by a police officer who was later fired with others. President Trump is taking aim at regulating social media, planning to issue an executive order of some sorts, arguing Twitter is unfair to him and conservatives. Meanwhile, Trump took to Twitter to accuse a prominent TV news show host of murder, a conspiracy theory that led the widower of a woman who died of a medical condition to ask the social media platform to delete the president's tweets. Coronavirus-related deaths in the U.S. topped 100,000 as protests against mitigation efforts on the virus now involve hanging Kentucky's governor in effigy, and the president and his Democratic opponents spar over the use of face masks. Those are just some of the things that have happened so far this week in America. And for the next hour, we're going to take your phone calls at 513-419-7100. We want to hear you weigh in on the state of the nation, politics, and policy. And to help us along the way is the political junkie, Ken Rudin, who joins us on the phone today. Ken, hello.
Hello, Michael. Boy, that's a litany of some very depressing stories there.
It's just been a month of a week, you know, and that's not an attempt to downplay any of the significance, because I think we've grown used in this period to just a lot of stuff coming at us at once. But this is a lot of heavy stuff all coming at us at once. And I want to ask sort of a generic question at the top, Ken, here, just to gauge your expertise on history and America and the way politics impacts our culture. What is this period compare to historically in American history?
Well, I mean, you know, everything is different. We've never seen a president like this. So, I mean, I don't know where you can start by looking at the comparisons. When I think of horrific years, or at least in my memory and lifetime, one always goes back to 1968 with the violence at the conventions, with the assassinations of leaders, with tumult in the streets and at the convention and at the ballot box. We have not, in 1968, we did not have any kind of pandemic like we have now. I mean, the last time we had that was 1918, and we didn't have social media in 1918, nor did we have social media in 1968. But there was distrust with the government. There was just anger expressed on the streets. And, of course, the latest addition to anger in the streets we've seen with the latest killing of a black person by a white police officer, and with the differences of stories. You hear an official police report, and then you see the actual video, which contradicts what the police are saying. And this is somewhat reminiscent of just police violence, or at least police actions against the cities and the urban communities in 1968. I mean, I'm kind of trying to look for comparisons, but let's just say that maybe 2020 deserves its own place in history. We've seen nothing really quite like it.
We have violence. We have a unique presidency taking place. We have a global pandemic, once in a century situation in that respect. And it's just hard, I think, for a lot of people to go day to day and keep it together, especially, I imagine, someone like you who consumes as much news as you do, who talks about the news professionally the way you do. Are you able to process all of this in a way that doesn't just destroy you mentally?
Well, you know, something, not that this is about me, because so many people are going through these terrible things that's happening, but it is, for somebody who, you know, loves to talk about the process and about the democratic institutions and things like that, and to see the unfathomable suffering, 100,000 lives taken, over 1.5 million people infected with the virus, so many people out of work, losing their life savings, their businesses, perhaps their place of residence because they can't pay their rent. And then to see a president, rather than being the empathizer in chief, somebody who, the consoler in chief, will lash out and come up with concoctions about, you know, that an MSNBC host murdered somebody, or you know, Hillary Clinton is a skank. Who says something like that when there's so much suffering out there? And this is the part that just eats me alive, because not that I expect different, a different kind of behavior from somebody who's behaved a certain way his whole life, but please, for God's sakes, at some point, show some decorum, show some understanding of what America is going through, and I don't think he does, and this is what makes it so much more painful.
And we're talking with the political junkie Ken Rudin here on Cincinnati Edition. We're also joined now by WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, who's on the phone. Howard, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Michael.
And we want to hear from you, too, your thoughts about just the state of things right now, how you're dealing with it, what upsets you, and give us a call at 513-419-7100 if you're listening, and we'll hand it over to Howard Wilkinson. Give us some of your thoughts, Howard.
Well, I mean, I was listening to Ken, and I agree completely that the response coming out of this White House is just unbelievable. It has never, we've had national tragedies, national disasters before, nothing quite like this, but there's no empathy whatsoever. It's all about him. He talks about it in terms of what it's doing to him and his reelection chances, and then, you know, we'll sit there and, as Ken said, talk about talk show host murdering people years ago, you know, with absolutely no reason to believe such a thing. And it's mind-boggling. It makes politics something that, I mean, politics used to be fun to cover because it was interesting, and there were ideas, and there was at least a modicum of civility, and there was an attitude of the people who were in the White House that there was a dignity of that office that needed to be maintained even in the middle of a political campaign. And that's gone. I mean, it's absolutely just gone, and it's sad.
Ken Rudin, I think when we had you on last month, one of the topics we explored was rally around the flag moments and whether President Trump missed that opportunity. And I almost regret framing it that way. I know that was a common discussion on discussion programs like this, but I'm wondering if a better exploration in that arena would be whether we as Americans are missing opportunity after opportunity to calm down and try to listen to one another. And as Howard referenced empathy in the president, whether we as a people are lacking empathy for one another. We can't agree on how to respond to something that, for once, all of us experience at the same time. We're experiencing this pandemic all at the same time, different degrees, different economic impacts, perhaps, but certainly a lot of the social measures are impacting all of us. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Do we still have Ken?
Oh, was that directed at me?
I apologize, Ken. Yes.
Listen, I apologize, too. Well, here's the thing, though. You know, I agree with completely what Howard is saying, but you think of horrific events in our lifetimes, and certainly 9/11 comes to mind. I mean, after 9/11, even though it was temporary, there was a coming together of the American people. We all were on the same page. We were all Americans. I remember even Congress, Democrats and Republicans, sat together because just as a sign of unity. Again, that didn't last long, but it was there for a while. When Gabby Giffords, the congresswoman from Arizona, was shot, there was a feeling, and even in other horrific gun crimes, you think of the children who were slaughtered in Newtown, Connecticut, the black parishioners in Charleston. I mean, all these things that are happening, there's a sense that the country is coming together. But the fact that wearing a mask is seen differently by Democrats and Republicans, the simple thing of wearing a mask in this pandemic and this COVID-19 crisis that's taken over 100,000 American lives, the fact that you have a Democrat or Republican decides whether you should wear a mask or not is beyond comprehension. And I think that is, was this here before Trump got here? Yes. Will it be here after Trump leaves? Should he ever leave? Yes. And it's just regrettable. And I, You know, I mean, for somebody, and again, Howard says politics is fun. Politics isn't always fun, but at least it's an honorable profession. Journalism is an honorable profession. But sometimes I just don't recognize what's happening in this country. And you know, having seen as much as I've seen, I've never said this before, that I just don't recognize what's happening.
We got a listener comment from Paul who called in and left a message for us. He says, I guess he asks how something as innocuous as wearing a mask becomes part of the culture wars. It defines who you are. And that's a point that Paul raises, certainly, because the culture war has extended to the way that we respond to something that science has told us is problematic, and that is this novel coronavirus, COVID-19, which has shut down our society in so many ways, taken over 100,000 American lives, many more lives around the world as well. Howard, you're a politics guy and have been for decades, and culture wars, you know, I've certainly been a part of that for the past several decades and maybe forever in some respect, depending on what the interests are at the time. But we're so polarized currently, and now the mask, that's become part of this. Do you agree with what Paul is wondering here, how something as what he calls innocuous as wearing a mask can become of the culture war, and now is part of the presidential campaign? Joe Biden wore a mask during a Memorial Day event in Delaware, and he was mocked by some of the president's supporters and then by the president.
Yes, I do agree with Paul, and I also agree with the governor of the state of Ohio, Mike DeWine, who every day when he does a briefing on the situation in Ohio, talks about the mask and says, please, he's pleading with people, saying, this is not a political act. We're not asking you to do a Republican thing or a Democratic thing. We're just asking you to do the right thing to help not even to protect yourself, but to protect your loved ones and people you don't know. It's just a matter of common sense in a situation like this. There is no politics to it, but it's been layered onto this, mainly by President Trump and his supporters, because they're the ones who are walking around and defying this in great numbers. I see him every day. I saw him this morning when I went out to get some takeout breakfast. And I'd say, you know, probably 3/4 of the people I ran into weren't wearing masks. It's just disheartening.
And even worse than that, you look at the scenes that came out of Memorial Day. You look at the beach. You look at Ocean City, Maryland, on the boardwalk. You look at the Land of the Ozarks in Missouri. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people congregating close to each other with no mask, and children. My goodness, children involved in this. They bring children into this who don't even have a say in their future and in their health. But they're brought along with it, maybe part of the ritual. But there are, you look at Anthony Fauci and you see him, the famous picture of him just rubbing his brow. This time was over something the president has said, but we're all rubbing our brow in astonishment that you know, we know how this disease spreads. We know the lives and the cost and it's taken on Americans, and yet There's a sense out there that it can't happen to me. And those pictures on Memorial Day weekend, my God, were just horrifying.
And we're talking with the political junkie Ken Rudin, who joins us on the phone. And we're also joined by WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. You can call us at 513-419-7100. We've had some technical issues, but we will be able to take a message from you if we're not able to get you on the air. You can also email your thoughts to talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, you just said we know about the virus, right? We know what the danger could be, but that's what seems to be so disparate in the way that people interpret the news and the messages that we're getting. People don't seem to know for sure what the situation is because of where they choose to get information and how they choose to respond to that information. And that seems to be at the root, at the disparity in the way that we're acting. And then the policy in certain states versus states here and states there, it's all so politicized.
Well, that's very true. And Anthony Fauci himself said, look, there's so much of this virus we don't know. We don't understand. We don't know for sure that it's going to lessen during the summer and come back with a vengeance in the fall and the winter, as the Spanish flu did in 1918 and 1919. We don't know that. But the fact is that it's become political. The fact that the president will say, liberate Minnesota, liberate Wisconsin, as if this is a call to arms against those oppressive Democratic governors who are, you know, trying to keep the states shut down because of safety concerns. Look, there are so many people who have lost everything. They've lost businesses. They've spent a lifetime putting together. There are people who have lost loved ones who have done everything right. And it's incalculable what the loss in this country, but it should not be political. If the president says, I mean, at a press conference this week, when a reporter asked a question about whether he's wearing a mask, the president said, oh, I know why you're wearing a mask. You're being politically correct. I mean, it's okay to drink hydrochloroquine, which is proven to be dangerous, but he'll do that, but he won't wear a mask. It's just, it's like bizarro world. You know, where up is down and down is up from Superman comics. This is, and I'm not making light of it, it's become bizarro world, and one party stands for one thing and another party stands for another. And it's also about safety in voting, and the two parties are far apart on that as well. It's everything. It's everything we're touching is just tainted by political differences.
We'll talk about some of the escalating violence in this country a little bit more. We'll talk about what's going on in Minneapolis and the way that could play out. We'll talk about the effigy hanging of Governor Andy Beshear, the Democratic governor of Kentucky, over the weekend and his response to it. And we'll continue to take your phone calls at 513-419-7100. We got a message from Dr. Sawyer, who says people should wear a full face shield. Masks are for sick people, and that will help depoliticize this. Bob wrote in and said he's surprised by the number of people buying into conspiracy theories at this time. We'll be looking at a conspiracy theory floated by the president quite prominently in recent days as well coming up. Frank writes in to say that the mask is like the yellow star in Germany. Our president is pushing a segregation of people who are others. We have a man who believes he is the sole and only ruler of this country, and I am a Republican who is saying that. That was a comment from Frank, who we took a message from. We've also heard in an email from Nancy, who says she likens this to a dysfunctional family, where the irregular behaviors of the head of the family, President Trump, causes the rest of the family, Republican Party, American people, world residents, to be in disarray. These members keep trying to do anything that he will approve, but what is okay today is wrong tomorrow. Nancy goes on to write, friends become enemies. People keep trying to create peace, but find it impossible. We need a divorce so we can all recover from this debacle. We also got an email from Richard, who writes, why are the local enablers, Portman, Chaffetz, Winstrup, getting a free ride on all this? How is that even possible? We'll continue to take your comments at talk@wvxu.org and at 513-419-7100. We are going to bring a little bit of levity to these challenging conversations that we're having, though. Every time we have the political junkie Ken Rudin on the air, we want to give away one of his famous buttons, and we do that when you answer a trivia question correctly. And Ken, what is the trivia question today?
Well, one of the crazy things in the news this week is the fact that the president has threatened to take the Republican convention away from Charlotte, North Carolina, because the governor, the Democratic governor there, won't guarantee that thousands and thousands of Republicans could be there together. So with the conventions in the news, you know, everybody likes to say that that you pick a certain city in the state to help you win the state in November, which is not always the case. So the question is, when was the last time that both convention cities were won by their respective parties, the states were won by the respective parties in November. So in other words, for example, this year, last year, Donald Trump won. This question is really before 2006. So, for example, in 2016, Hillary Clinton had the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, but she didn't win the state of Pennsylvania in 2016. So my question is, when was the last time the two conventions were won by the respective parties holding the convention in those cities?
Okay, so basically the question is, you have to find
it. Please save me, Michael.
That's okay. We're having a good time for a moment, and I'm very appreciative of laughing at your expense. So thank you, Ken, so much.
As you always do.
Well, you always come up with such great questions, and we sometimes have a hard time spitting them out because they are so good. So this is what we want the listeners to think about when they start to call in to try to answer the question. You want to find a presidential election year, look at where both national parties, the two major national parties, hosted their conventions, and you want to find the year where that party won that state where the convention was held, and that has to be true for both parties in both of those states. For example,
do you realize we've already gone through the entire show? The show's over already.
We are out of time. We've got no underwriting in. There may be no more Cincinnati edition tomorrow. So we're going to take a break. We'll let the audience sort that out. And again, Ken, tell everyone what they'll win. What's at stake here if they can get through all those words?
Very valuable political junkie campaign button.
You're going to want one of these buttons. So call in at 513-419-7100. We'll look forward to your answers to what we think was a question. This is Cincinnati edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken. Is Ken on the line?
Ken is on the line.
We're having a bit of a strange day, and that's okay. We're all working in different rooms and trying to connect in different ways. So we do apologize to our listeners, and thank you for your patience throughout this weird time as we continue to produce radio in a new manner. And also on the line with us via old-fashioned telephone is Howard Wilkinson, WVXU senior political analyst, and the guy who is single-handedly keeping a lot of local restaurants afloat, I think, with his takeout order. So Howard, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, I'm doing my part, yeah.
And let me ask you, Howard, are you having any luck out there with your mask on and your glasses? This is coming from a fellow glasses wearer who is still having a hard time walking around because of how foggy the glasses get.
Well, I did find the cure. If you take a wet Kleenex and put it up at the top of the mask, it will help cut down the fogging of your glasses.
And it's not uncomfortable?
No, not really.
All right, well, that's
Not soaking wet, just, you know, a little bit wet, and it'll help.
All right, I'm going to try that today because it's getting out of hand. Our trivia question today is, when was the last year the states of both convention cities voted for the party's presidential candidate? So think about the party that hosted its convention in a city, and then that party won that state in that election year, and that has to be true for both locales. So you got to go through all the presidential years until you find the one where that was true. We've got some more listener comments, and we want to hear from you as well at 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org. We got a call from Jack who told us, I do think it's a political gesture wearing a mask because it says we're all in this together versus individual choices. Bob says he believes the Republicans are acting like a cult. They follow in lockstep. And he also wonders what they think cases forcing regions to open up. I'll have to causes regions to open up. Excuse me for that misinterpretation. And we want to hear from you as well. 513-419-7100. Mark writes in to say, the world is watching America like America watched the Tiger King. And Ken, we have a lot going on in this country, as we've been talking about for the first half hour of this program. And as we slide into the second one, let's continue now. Donald Trump, you spoke of Donald Trump's empathy. He did send out a tweet earlier today recognizing the loss of 100,000 American lives. The president tweeted, quote, "We have just reached a very sad milestone with the coronavirus pandemic, deaths reaching 100,000. To all the families and friends of those who have passed, I want to extend my heartfelt sympathy and love for everything that these great people stood for and represent. God be with you." He tweeted an hour after that, "All over the world, the coronavirus, a very bad quotation mark gift from China, marches on. Not good." And Ken, I want to read a comment that was made by New York Times columnist Tom Friedman on the Bill Maher show on Friday. He said, quote, "Trump has talked like we're being China, testing, tracing. We're actually acting, though, like we're going to be Sweden and go for herd immunity. We're preparing to do neither, and we're talking like we're superior to both." What are your thoughts on that reaction from Thomas Friedman, Ken?
Oh, my. Well, you know, something that, here's the thing, though. The fact that we have a president who points fingers. I mean, just think of the economy. The economy, when the economy was booming, and it was booming, and we could you know, give credit to whoever we decide to give credit to. But the fact is, when the economy was booming, President Trump took credit. And I said at the time, he deserves to take credit, because if the economy is doing well, the president should get the credit. If it's going poorly, he should not get the credit. He should get the blame. And then when the economy turned sour, it was the fact because of Obama and Biden and the response to the Ebola crisis. You know, it's mind-boggling. But anyway, the fact is, you know, something, I was listening to you read the president's tweet about the empathy, the so-called empathy about the 100,000 Americans who died. There had been so much pressure on the president for days, say, please say something, show some kind of heart, and instead of pointing fingers or talking about Joe Scarborough or Hillary Clinton. And so, yes, he says all these things, and then he says a gift from China, like it's China's fault.
Well, Ken, let me ask you, because we've heard a lot about China throughout the Donald Trump presidency. It was a big part of his campaign, trade deals, how we're going to have a beautiful new trade deal with China. And he's been very critical of China, but not so critical of President Xi Jinping, who he's referred to as a friend of his. So how does he balance that act of criticizing the nation while trying to remain friendly with its leader?
Well, you know something, if you just did a timeline of his comments about China, they are all over the map. They're all Xi is a great friend. Think of what he said about Kim Jong-un in North Korea. I mean, little rocket man, and we're going to wipe him off the face of the earth. And then suddenly he's getting beautiful letters from my friend. It's like just two separate, completely different people is what he does. Let's just see, you know, for all the criticism he's leveled towards China and blaming China for the virus, when the limited and the fading democracy of Hong Kong seem, once it goes under, at least from China, but with restrictions, let's see what the president does about it. He's talked about standing up, you know, Obama was a weak president and didn't do this and didn't do that. Right now, China, in the middle of a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic, they're talking about just stifling a suppression of the press and some freedoms in Hong Kong, which was once a thriving democracy. Let's see the American response to it. I suspect it will be a lot of talk, and that's about it.
I also want to note an article in The Atlantic, and I want to note it because Donald Trump, our president, also tweeted about The Atlantic laying off some of its staff. So here we are in the middle of a pandemic that has caused some significant economic strife across all business sectors, including the media, and some journalists at The Atlantic have lost their jobs. But that news came in the same week that author Tom Nichols published a piece in this esteemed publication with the headline, "Donald Trump, the Most Unmanly President." And the subheadline was, "Why don't the president's supporters hold him to their own standard of masculinity. And I want to read just a quick part of this article from The Atlantic to put it into context. He says, but since his first day as a presidential candidate, I've been baffled by one mystery in particular. Why do working class men, the most reliable component of Donald Trump's base, support someone who is, by their own standards, the least masculine man ever to hold the modern presidency? The question is not whether Trump fails to meet some archaic or idealized version of masculinity. The president's inability to measure up to Marcus Aurelius or Omar Bradley is not the issue. Rather, the question is why so many of Trump's working class white male voters refuse to hold Trump to their own standards of masculinity, why they support a man who behaves more like a little boy. Again, that was written in The Atlantic by Tom Nichols. Howard Wilkinson, WVXU senior political analyst. What are you hearing out on the trail? What are you hearing from voters who maybe meet the demographic that Tom Nichols was writing about there, how they support a president who, in Tom's opinion, doesn't quite measure up to their own standards?
Well, I think there's some evidence out there, and I've talked to some people, too, that are starting to ask that question of themselves, who have been Trump supporters from the start. You can see it in reflecting some of the poll numbers. He has, in so many ways, acted like such a petulant child. And like when he stormed out of the press conference at the White House a couple weeks ago, when he got into it with two female reporters, and he ran away, which is sort of like the old schoolyard bully. You know, somebody stands up to you, the bully usually runs away. And that's the kind of thing that I think people are starting, his supporters are starting to notice now. And it's particularly among senior voters, the older voters who also supported him. It's chipping away at his support among those people. They look at it and say, well, you know, this man has already said he's willing to sacrifice us in order to restart this economy, sacrifice us to the COVID-19. Well, we're not ready to be sacrificed.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. It's also the number to call for both comments and if you have an answer to today's Political Junkie trivia question, which was, when was the last year the states of both convention cities voted for their respective party's presidential candidate? Let's get some answers now. Our first caller with a response is Larry. Hi, Larry. What's your question? Or excuse me. What's your answer to the question?
I thought it might have been 2016, but I could see that Philadelphia or Pennsylvania didn't vote for Hillary. So I looked back and it looks like it was 1992.
Ken, was it 1992?
Well, that's what's so great about the internet. But the answer is correctly 1992 because of the Democrats. The Democrats and went to New York City, and of course, Bill Clinton was nominated in Madison Square Garden, won New York State. George Bush, the president at the time, was renominated in Houston, Texas. And Texas voted for George Bush in November. But all those times, you think of all the times since then, all those states, you know, Bob Dole had the convention in San Diego, but California didn't do it for him. John McCain had his convention in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it didn't go for him. So 1992 is the last time that both convention cities went for these respective presidential nominees.
It was a great question. I think we delivered it a little clunky, but it was a really cool question, and we appreciate you for coming up with it. And Larry, I know we have some other people on the line who had the correct answer, but Larry got in first, so you win the Political Junkie button. Hang on the line, Larry. Our producer, Selena Reeder, is going to get some information to you so that Ken can send you that button. Thank you so much for your call, and congratulations on your win. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you'd like to join our conversation, let's go now to Bill. Hi, Bill, what's your question or comment?
Sir, I was just calling about your show, and I've been listening for a few minutes, and really, I hear you guys talk about, and you know, everybody coming together on these issues, but yet you guys have done nothing but bash our president since you've been online. And, you know, it was comment after comment for the first 10 minutes of the show about everything wrong that our president has done. But you don't really present the facts and the truth on what he has done and what he's done right in our country.
Well, Bill, we are.
Tell me what he's done right.
Yeah.
What he's done right? Well, he held off Chinese flights from coming in. He's named the terrorist groups. What happened to the terrorist attacks that we were having all through the Obama years? They've somewhat disappeared, haven't they? I mean, you don't hear about these things on a daily basis. You know, he's done great things for our economy. He's done wonderful things for our economy. He's been at least somewhat truthful. And to be honest, I'm not for either party. I think they're all full of it. I think we all deserve and need better leaders and new leaders, because these people are crooks. I mean, our news is stoked in chaos. And it's stoked in scandals every day about all these people, from Biden to Clinton, and we've got facts. I mean, look at what Clinton did to the DNC.
Okay.
Look at what she did against Sanders. I mean, if you can't admit that it's all corrupt,
Bill, we appreciate the call.
I know, but it's good to be one-sided.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you for the call, and we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for calling
in. We don't have time to talk about the scandals in the Trump administration, do we, with all the cabinet secretaries and the conflicts of interest? We don't have time for that, do we?
We might have some time on another program.
I'm just saying, Bill makes a point that they're all crooks, and I understand that point of view. Correct, you know, we have seen scandals going on. First of all, I don't remember any indictments in the Obama administration. What Hillary Clinton did with Bernie Sanders, she got more votes and she got more delegates. And so I don't know, you know, what kind of a scandal that was. And to talk about the Biden scandal, to talk about Hunter Biden, to have the Republicans in the Senate open up an investigation into Hunter Biden while 100,000 people are dying, have died in this country, but the Senate needs to focus on Hunter Biden. Well, what about Jared Kushner? Why is he leading the fight for peace in the Middle East and the coronavirus and everything else? The fact that he's his son-in-law has anything to do with it? There are so many hypocritical things that Republicans have said, that look at what Obama did, look what Biden did, and it's happening right under their nose under this administration. And they're saying, well, you know, we're one-sided. Believe me, if Obama were president today, and if he were doing the same things that the president is doing now, we would be on Obama's behind on this. We would not let him get away with anything. In fact, there's a reason why the Republicans did so well in 2010 and 2014, because of Obama's failures. But to spend 4 years of a Trump presidency and still be talking about Obama, for God's sakes, let's talk about Jimmy Carter. Let's talk about, you know, Herbert Hoover. The fact is, Trump is president, and look what's happened to us.
Okay. And
that's what we should be talking about.
I want to make sure that our audience knows that we will always accept multiple viewpoints on a lot of issues, and we're trying to explore this in a way that we think is fair. The issue at hand is the way the president has handled a variety of issues and the state of the world currently, and we certainly don't mean to insult anyone's intelligence, and we would always welcome you to call at 513-419-7100. Your viewpoints, no matter how different they might be from guests on the program or news that you read at WVXU, will always be welcome on our airwaves and in our comments section. And speaking of comments, I'll get to some now before we take this other quick break. Brittany writes in to say, I don't think this is a political issue. This is about people choosing not to wear masks to protect others. When I'm at the grocery store or elsewhere, I see someone without one. I'm assuming that they don't care about protecting me. Jeff wrote in, unfortunately, It's already later. Narcissistic personality disorder was a joke for a day when the symptoms went viral, and those symptoms looked so familiar that it was gone, drowned in a sea of continuing Trump misadventures. We have a psychopath in the White House. That's a message from Bill. We heard from Karen as well, who wrote in to say, looking for empathy from Trump is like trying to get blood from a turnip. It's not going to happen. Narcissists and sociopaths are incapable of feeling empathy. We got a note from Diane, who wrote, after the New York City Trade Towers tragedy, we did not come together. Look at Dawson, Minnesota, which was torn apart. I'm sure there were many other small communities which experienced the same turmoil. Susan wrote in to say, I agree with the person who said that they don't recognize this country anymore. And that was you, Ken. She said, and I would add that the president is a symptom of our malaise, not the cause. Violence and racism are as American as apple pie. And as Martin Luther King said in an interview on 60 Minutes in 1966, quote, a riot is the language of the unheard. We also heard from Greg, who said, it's odd that the president doesn't promote masks as a tool to quicker, safer reopening. It's an obvious win-win. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our waning moments on the program with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Ken, I want to throw it back to you because what we're talking about as a theme throughout this is what matters in terms of facts when we're discussing any situation that our society, our nation, or more localized governments may face, and there's such a disparity in opinion on what to accept as accurate. And that goes all the way to the White House. And we've seen some what have been described as conspiracy theories floated around by the president in recent days and weeks. One has been called Obamagate, which he says makes Watergate look like small potatoes. And the other is this tragedy involving a former congressional staffer to Joe Scarborough when he was in Congress. And he's now, of course, a prominent morning news show host on MSNBC's Morning Joe. Ken, tell us a little bit about what the type of floating of ideas from the president does to the way rank and file Americans accept news in this age.
Well, Steve, you know something, while we were just on this break, I'll make this quick. I was thinking about my response to Bill, who called in and said that we're bashing the president. And first of all, I want to apologize because I mean, I keep saying we need more Trump people to call into the show. I want to see why I don't see it the way they see it. And so I apologize for lashing out, which I seems like I lashed out. But when the president minimizes a threat like the virus and says it's no more than the flu, and yes, he did close the border with China, but the fact is that it didn't come straight from China, the fact that we lost 100,000 Americans. So the fact that he's minimized it, the fact that he's sending a message by not wearing a mask, he's sending a message by taking hydrochloroquine, which is dangerous, this frightens me. This whole thing frightens me. So when he sends signals out to what's important, and when he sends stuff on Twitter that liberate these states, suddenly armed Americans show up at these things and they hang Governor Andy Beshear in effigy. They bring children to these things and they spit at reporters to just show that it's okay. I don't know why if we can wear seatbelts, why we can't wear a mask. I don't know why that's an infringement of liberties. But when the president seems to support defying these governors' efforts to keep the American people safe, it becomes, you know, us against them. And this is the thing that just eats my heart out. And I, again, an apology to Bill if I sounded rude, because that's the last thing I want to do. But I just think that this president is making the situation worse by inflaming passions.
And when I got to meet Ken Rudin in person, I think it was earlier this year or late last year, I saw what a gentle giant you are. So I know you don't mean to be rude, Ken. So
I don't.
Always appreciate having you on. And let me throw it over to Howard Wilkinson in another comparison, because we're seeing some really tragic images, of course, coming out of Minnesota and in other places in this country in recent weeks involving the killings of Black people. And this latest one involved police officers in Minnesota, and there's rioting taking place there. We're also seeing state houses stormed by white people, armed with serious artillery. And even the reactions to those situations are highly volatile and political. And I don't even know what question to ask about what we're seeing, but are we close to something really bad happening?
Well, I think there's certainly a potential for that, but I've been wondering all along since the protesters stormed into the state capitol building in Michigan and the hanging of Andy Beshear and effigy down in Frankfurt. And I can't help but think, you know, if armed groups of black men and women showed up at state capitals carrying automatic weapons, what do you think would happen? I think they would be rounded up and taken to jail. And I'm wondering why these people aren't being
Let's take the last couple of minutes to get some reactions from our listeners who have been kind and patient on the line. We're only going to have about 15 to 30 seconds for each of you. So as I come to you, just be swift with your comments. We'd appreciate it. Let's go now to Stephen. Hi, Stephen. What's your question or comment?
I'd like to say it's an honor to be on the air.
Thank you.
My comment is this. You know, it's simple. I think when we're under the umbrella of a certain party, Republican or Democrat, it seems like we have a certain skewed view in that direction. And I consider myself a pretty conservative Democrat. And I think that's the problem with our country right now, is where whoever's supporting our president and what he's doing is not looking at all of the things that he's ignoring. You know, like, have we heard anything about the incident in Minnesota? Have we heard anything about the killings in Atlanta? In Georgia, you know, these things are being missed in lieu of little battles over policy or things that have to do with simple safety measures that are in place to protect people.
Stephen, thank you so much for the call. We do appreciate it. I want to make sure that we've only got about a minute left. I want to make sure we get to some others. Please call again. We do appreciate you listening and calling in. Let's go now to John. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Yes. I was just wondering if any of you guys can remember a time in the last 50 or 60 years where we as Americans have been such poor victims. Oh, the WHO, China did it to us. Now, that's from the man who said, you guys have a good day.
Okay, John, thank you so much for the call as well. I should get that off of there. Appreciate everyone who listened. We had quite a show today, a lot of emails, a lot of comments, and that's what we like to have here, is a full discussion with as many divergent views as possible. But we got a lot of people who are feeling the pressure of being alive right now in a very strange state of affairs in this country. And I'm certainly among them. And Ken Rudin, our political junkie, and Howard Wilkinson, our WVXU senior political analyst, I know you are too. Thank you for helping me try to make sense of some of it today. Ken, always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Michael.
And Howard, thank you for taking some time to be with us as well.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program, every episode ever, at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. And I'm Michael Monks.